You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
What we're dealing with here is a total lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Done by Law, brought to you by the Federation of Community Legal Centres.
Welcome to Done by Law on 3CR 855am, 3cr.org.au and 3CR Digital. You're here with Beth. We'd like to start by acknowledging the traditional owners of the lands on which we are broadcasting, where we are, that is the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and to pay our respects to their elders past and present. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Tonight on Done by Law, we're discussing projects by Youth Law and Youth Affairs Council Victoria, aiming to educate young people about the new affirmative consent laws, which took effect on the 30th of July 2023. Just a warning that our show today will include discussion of sexual violence. Key changes to consent laws were introduced by the Victorian Government in the Justice Legislation Amendment, Sexual Offences and Other Matters Act of 2022 in Victoria. The reforms aim to place a greater focus on the actions of people using sexual violence to seek consent, rather than just on what the victim survivors did or did not say or do. The changes include an updated definition of consent, the introduction of the affirmative sexual consent model, changes to circumstances where there is no consent, clarifying that stealthing, that is, non-consensual condom removal, tampering or non-use, is a crime, changes to image-based abuse, and improvements to the justice system to protect victim survivors, including better education and direction for members of a jury to understand sexual violence. The new laws in Victoria emphasise an affirmative approach to consent. Affirmative consent means a person must take steps to say or do something to check that the other person or persons involved are consenting to a sexual activity freely and voluntarily. This means that sexual consent can never be assumed. It involves ongoing and mutual communication and decision making between all people involved. Along with presenting on Done by Law, I work as an education and training lawyer at Youth Law. Youth Law, or the Young People's Legal Rights Centre, is a free statewide legal service for young people up to age 25 in Victoria. I'm excited to be talking with Laura Crozier, Affirmative Consent Project Officer with Youth Affairs Council Victoria. Youth Affairs Council Victoria, or YACVIC, is the peak body and leading policy advocate for young people and the youth sector in Victoria. We'll be chatting all things affirmative consent in anticipation of our upcoming free joint webinar, Affirmative Consent for Youth Workers, taking place on Wednesday the 21st of May, 2 to 3pm, as part of Law Week 2025. Laura, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me, Beth.
To start us off, could you tell our listeners a little bit about the awesomeness that is Youth Affairs Council Victoria?
Absolutely. So I have the pleasure of working at YACVIC, and we are the peak body and leading policy advocate for young people and the youth sector in Victoria. So we work in the space of advocating for young people to policymakers, so to the government, and just working with young people to ensure that their voices are heard on all issues that matter to them.
Fantastic. And many of our listeners work with community legal centres in Victoria. How can YACVIC assist community legal centres workers who support young people?
I think one of the biggest ways that YACVIC can be a resource to youth workers regardless of what sector they work in, is by utilising our platform YERP, which is a youth engagement resource platform. It's recently been redone. So there was a huge consultation and co-design process done with young people, and it's been redesigned into this incredible website. And it has resources for workers and young people on this website. So whether it's talking about how we pay young people, whether it's talking about how we engage young people to run ethical trainings, how we engage them to ensure that we're not using their voices in a tokenistic way. You know, there's so many different resources on YERP for youth workers. It's also a platform for young people though as well. So there's more resources designed for young people to be able to access things like, you know, how they can go out of their way to build on their advocacy skills or their public speaking skills. So there's heaps of resources on YERP, so I definitely encourage people to check that out. But YACVIC also has a huge suite of trainings as well. So we have trainings like advocacy training for young people, media training for young people. That's just a few of the ones that are designed specifically for young people. But we also have ones that are designed for the youth sector as well. So child safeguarding training is a new one that we've just started delivering. How to pay young people, or paying young people when we work with them in the youth sector. Ethical practice with young people, youth participation. A suite of trainings that are designed to make sure that young people are the forefront of all the work that's being done in the youth sector.
It's just fantastic. And I have to say, from looking at your website, that it's awesome and it's a real resource. And I've signed up for some of your trainings moving forward and feel like they would be a really great resource for a lot of community legal centre lawyers and non-legal workers that work with young people. So I'd encourage everyone to look it up.
We love the support.
Oh, it's great. It's really great. I have to say that it's not something that was sort of forefront of my awareness in terms of training prior to working at Youth Law. And I'm really glad that I've had the opportunity to get a sense of what YACVIC's all about. And I really love the way that you, so many of your resources are tailored to encouraging really meaningful and ethical participation by young people. That's really fantastic.
Yeah, it's a real big part of what we do. I would definitely encourage people to engage in that way. If you can access some trainings through us, we do sometimes run public trainings, but you know, organizations can also reach out to book trainings for their organizations in particular. And other than that, there's a bunch of other ways you can get involved as well. And one thing that I will mention is the YPPN, which is the Youth Participation Practice Network. That's a network of youth workers from across Victoria. And there's, I think, bi-monthly community of practice meetings as well, where, you know, just recently we had a community of practice with 50 youth workers from across the state. And we were actually discussing what we're discussing today, affirmative consent. So the topics change each time, but it's a great time to come along and be able to connect with other workers across the state with, you know, like-minded views, or who are also just kind of paving the way in the work that they're doing.
That's fantastic. And that's a really good time to chat about affirmative consent. So YACVIC has a role in delivering and supporting affirmative consent education through this program. Why was YACVIC an obvious choice in this regard?
I think probably from everything that I've mentioned about the trainings that we run and our place as a peak body for young people in Victoria, you know, we have great connections with young people, but also our rural program was a big part of why this particular funding was something that we were so interested in. With the original grant that came around, we actually applied for a place-based model of education and delivered through one of our stations in the Southern Mallee out of Swan Hill, which was such an incredible opportunity to be able to work with just kind of a singular community to develop the needs for and meet the needs of that particular community. In the Mallee, there was, you know, extremely high rates of teen pregnancy and gender-based violence. So we knew that it was a place that needed the education, but also because we'd had a worker based in Swan Hill for many, many years, and she had such an incredible connection to the community there. We knew that young people were really interested in knowing how to navigate conversations around sexual health and consent. So it was a really easy choice for us to kind of put our hands up for that funding opportunity. And I think that with all the evidence that we can supply based on the needs of young people in the communities that we're working with, it was a really hopefully simple choice that we were then selected for that funding.
That's fantastic. And I know that your affirmative consent project, Yeah Nah, which included some great educational videos, as you said, was developed in the Mallee by local young people. Could you talk me through your process and how it built on YakVic's existing strengths in encouraging youth participation, like you said?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest parts for us was that when we started the project, we actually brought on 6 young peer educators to run the project. So it wasn't just kind of one worker doing all the work in the background and occasionally consulting with young people. There was actually young people leading the way from the very start. So we hired 6 young peer educators as casual employees of YakVic, and then they were then trained in, you know, all things affirmative consent, the updated legislation. They were trained in, you know, meaningful acknowledgement of country and cultural safety when delivering workshops, sexual reproductive health, facilitating conversations around consent, just a range of different things that we thought would be really valuable to them in developing their professional development skills. And their ability to facilitate workshops once we got to that point, but also just their kind of skills when it came to navigating these conversations and being able to come up with the things that their community needed. Then we worked on developing the workshop that we now deliver in community, but we also worked on developing a bunch of resources as well. So we created, I think, 4 videos in the last kind of 2 years that I just, like, my heart swells when I watch these videos still. I still laugh every time I watch them, because there'll always be like a silent tear trickling out, because I'm just like so in awe of the ideas that our peer educators developed to be these beautiful resource videos, but also the other young people that came on board to consult and actually be a part of those videos as well. I was recently doing a webinar for a Mallee community council, and being able to say, like, this was young people from your community developing these, like, it's so heartwarming. And I think it just, like, really shows the power of what young people are capable of.
Yeah, they're beautiful videos, watching them. And it's lovely to see the young people, because it makes it real when you've got young people acting out these scenarios, which are obviously fictional, but they're things that they would encounter in their day-to-day lives.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And I was so shocked as well by how eager young people were to be involved in that as well. And, you know, we have them kind of knocking down our door being like, we want to be in more. And I'm like, okay, you just wait then. So it's really nice. And because I think as youth workers, we often kind of struggle with that engagement aspect. But, you know, when you really are meaningfully engaging young people, so really hearing what they're trying to tell you, taking that on board, developing the things that are meaningful and worthwhile to them, paying them for their time, paying them for their efforts, their own lived experience and expertise in, you know, what it is to be a young person in today's society, you know, I think it makes all the difference.
Oh, that's amazing. And your project, like you said, has been designed as a peer-to-peer education model. So how is this different from other models, and why is that a good thing? And I guess as a related question, is it something that happens across YakVic's other programs as well?
Yeah, it definitely is something that we do a lot at YakVic. Majority of our trainings are actually delivered by peer facilitators, so young people that have been hired to work in this space. And I think I kind of forgot the question, but
no. Well, you kind of answered it already.
Yeah. Sorry, but how does it differ to other models? I think that especially when we're talking about things like, you know, sex, consent, sexual health, they can be uncomfortable. And I think at some point we have to just get realistic and say, you know what, it is a little bit uncomfortable. But having young people navigate that conversation with other young people takes away that uncomfortability just a little bit. I think I really feel for teachers and, you know, staff in schools that are put in the position to like have to deliver this education and kind of been like, okay, you're delivering, you know, respectful relationships today or whatever it might be. Like, they're not necessarily trained in a way that's all-encompassing of what young people need. And I don't, like, that's not on teachers because I think that they're doing an incredible job. But there's a lot more to having these conversations than just having the conversation. It's being able to navigate the tricky conversations that surround a conversation like consent. It's being able to take on the hard-hitting questions, but also the soft-hitting questions, the funny ones that are designed to really throw you off because, you know, young people do that and that's totally fine. But I think, you know, being able to navigate that, being able to understand kind of where young people are coming from, understanding that, you know, the people acting out in class or in the workshops that you're delivering or asking silly questions, and we get, you know, so-called silly questions, it's often just curiosity. And I think that if we understand that, then we're going to understand young people a lot better. So when it's young people having those conversations, you know, it takes away a little bit of the awkwardness, but it also is just more relatable. Mm. It's, you know, it's a lot easier for a 15-year-old to ask me as a 23-year-old, you know, how does this work, than it would be to ask their teacher who's, you know, 55 or, you know, whatever age, because it's just, there's a difference there. And I think it's okay to acknowledge that. It's not an inherently bad thing. It's just how it is. I think if we learn to navigate that kind of conversation, then we'll be opening up these conversations in a more healthy, more productive manner.
Yep, definitely. And I've definitely heard delivering our training some of the questions that educators are getting, and they're curly, you know, and they're complicated.
So, yeah, and they can be, but it's not always a bad thing, you know. Like we've had questions like, you know, is it okay if, like, if my friend's having sex with a girl, if I tap in? And it's like, well, that's actually rape, but let's talk about it, you know, let's have that conversation because, you know, in these, especially, and because we do primarily deliver in rural and regional communities, that education isn't there for whatever reason, because it's harder to deliver this education in a rural or regional setting as well, because, you know your teachers, you see them outside of class, you see them at the supermarket, and that's even more uncomfortable. You also know your doctors and you know the pharmacist assistant, you know everyone in a small town, and that makes it really tricky to be able to navigate any sort of conversation in any setting. So I think that by answering these questions without judgment, we actually create a space where we can have these free-flowing conversations, and, you know, don't go out and call, like, why are you asking that? Like, you're just trying to get a rise out of me. Like, they're actually probably curious and they're asking it in that manner because they don't know any other way to do it, you know? So there's definitely some I think, grace that needs to be given to young people when they are trying to trip us up, if they're trying to trip us up.
Totally. That's a really, yeah, a really wise point. I feel like you've talked a bit about this as well, but can you tell our listeners a bit about YakVic's angle on affirmative consent, if that's a way to phrase it? And I guess thinking about other projects that are delivering education around affirmative consent, like how they might compare, and if you know anything about youth laws model, like how that might compare, but really any project.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the big things that we kind of take into our workshops when we're delivering them is an ethical model of consent. We talk a lot about enthusiastic consent, of course, but Jenny Walsh from the Hum Academy actually has a really incredible model based on ethical consent, and it follows kind of four key pillars of consent, the first being taking care of me, which is, you know, all of that checking in with yourself, making sure that you feel safe, you feel comfortable, and that this is something that you're wanting to engage in. The second pillar being taking care of the other person. So looking at how they're communicating with you, whether that be verbally or what their body language is telling you. So how you can check in with that person, you know, do you like it when I touch you here? Does this feel good for you? Are you comfortable? Do you feel safe? Is there anything I can do to make you feel better about what's happening? Like, but then also looking at their body language, you know, are they pulling you away? Are they pushing you away? Are they pulling you closer? Have they kind of changed their interactions since you started engaging in whatever you're engaging in? Looking at all of that. So, you know, communicating with them, but also looking at their body language. The third pillar is looking at power dynamics. So, being able to, first of all, identify our own power in situations, but then also once you've done that, looking at how we can change situations and make other people feel safer based on our own inherent power as well. So when we use a lot of scenarios in this activity, and often we kind of have a scenario and then people will come up with solutions that is the person that has less power having to change the way that they do things to make them feel safer. Whereas what we actually want to do is be a bit more progressive than that and actually look at how the person who has the power can identify they have power and change their actions to make the other person feel a little bit safer. So that's just kind of one thing that we look at. And an example that we use is sometimes, you know, a man walking alone at night and sees a woman walking towards him. A small act of identifying their power in that moment might be crossing to the other side of the street, you know, just making sure that that woman knows that you're not a threat. Because even though majority of men wouldn't be a threat, sometimes they are. And as women, we don't necessarily feel safe in that environment. So identifying our power and changing our actions based on that, being able to identify who has power in a situation. And then the final pillar of that ethical consent model is learning as we go, accepting our mistakes, owning our mistakes and moving forward. It's okay to make mistakes. Everybody does it. We're not going to be perfect all the time, but being able to own those and move forward is a really important part.
Yeah, that's a great model, and thanks for talking us through that. And I like the way that the identifying of the power imbalance and the more powerful person changing the behavior really maps really clearly onto that affirmative consent model of the onus being on the initiator of the sexual behavior to check in with the person they're initiating with and take those, you know, active steps to elicit consent. That's fantastic. And it is an interesting point too around learning and adapting our behaviour, and I think that's such an important thing, and it can, you know, be an interesting conversation around the role that the law plays in that as well. And in obviously it is difficult when law can be quite black and white, but the really positive thing about these laws is that they prompt the conversation about this and prompt people to think about it and to think about their behavior and how they could change it. Does that sound?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that, I mean, a big part of these legislative changes for me is that we are taking the onus off of victim survivors. And I think that in doing that, we see a real societal shift in the way that we view sexual violence as well. So yeah, I think we're on track.
Yeah, it's definitely steps forward.
Yes.
So moving on to our joint webinar.
Yes.
Bit of self-promotion here, which is on Wednesday, the 21st of May from 2 to 3 p.m., which is, it's held as a part of Victorian Law Week. What can folks expect from YakVic's part of that webinar?
I think a little bit of this, but more. So what I am really keen for the discussions that we're going to have in our webinar is kind of the practical knowledge of how to navigate conversations around consent, especially with the young people in our lives. It's a conversation I've been having a lot of recently and something that I feel is continuing to develop and become more and more insightful as I go on. So that's great for anyone that's going to be there, because I feel like every time I'm getting better. So lucky for you. But yeah, I think that practical knowledge of navigating conversations and also kind of a bit of a look into what the affirmative consent workshop, YENA, that we host at YakVic looks like, so that you can potentially see if it's something that you might like to engage your organisation with. So I will also just flag that it is currently free for rural and regional communities. So we can't deliver in schools, but any setting outside of a school, whether it be a TAFE, whether it be a local youth group, youth council, sporting club, we are free for rural and regional communities and available in metro communities for a facilitator fee as well.
That's fantastic. And I can say that that's a great complement for Youth Laws content, which is primarily around the details of the law changes. And one of the questions that I get asked a lot is, yeah, but can't you give me some practical examples? Can't you talk about how it's applied practically? And I know Yakivik are going to be the experts in that. So I'm really happy to be partnering with you, Laura. So thank you.
Yes, I think we complement each other very well.
So now we've plugged ourselves, I'll just give a little bit of information about Law Week as well. So Victoria Law Week runs from the 19th to the 25th of May of this year. Every year, it is a week of community-based events which help Victorians to identify legal problems, find legal information, get the right help, and learn how the law works. The events and activities are run by a range of legal, community and government organisations, and the program is managed by the Victoria Law Foundation. So all of the details about all the different amazing training sessions that are being held, and I'll include a plug for a great session on play and the law. So just inviting people to kind of bring their young people and the young at heart to engage in some play-based activities while they learn about the law is being run by West Heidelberg Community Legal Centre. And there is a huge array of other incredible events lined up. And they can all be seen on the Victoria Law Week website, which is www.viclawweek.org.au. And tickets to our session are available via that website as well. So snap them up quick. Don't miss out. So in closing, I just want to thank you again, Laura. Thanks for speaking with me tonight and telling us a bit about what YakVic does.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You've been listening to Done by Law on 3CR 855 AM, 3cr.org.au and 3CR Digital. I've been talking with Laura Crozier from the Youth Affairs Council of Victoria, and we've been chatting all things affirmative consent in preparation for our upcoming free joint webinar on Wednesday, the 21st of May, 2 to 3pm as part of Law Week 2025. Going to go out with some community announcements and stay tuned for Voices of West Papua coming up next.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.